Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Shop Talk Show. Oh, my God. This is going to be a fabulous show. But before we start, two quick sponsors. We have Environments for Humans sponsoring at environmentsforhumans.com. Two big conferences coming out, back-to-back conferences in Hawaii. That's the incontrolconference.com and the cssdevconf.com. Both me and Dave are going to be at both of those things, so check those out. We'll tell you about that a little bit later in the conference. And a brand-new sponsor, lynda.com. Training there. It's the most comprehensive of training, you know, library of educational web-ish, you know, designy training materials anywhere on the web. lynda.com/shoptalk. Again, we'll tell you a little bit more about that later in the show, but for now, let's kick things off.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to episode 40-something or other of the Shop Talk Show. I'm Dave Rupert, and with me is Chris Coyer.
Hey, everybody. Doesn't the sound of that intro podcast really just send shivers down my spine? We had some technical troubles earlier this week about what happened, Dave?
So we had that awesome episode with Matthew Smith, episode 42, which will now be known as episode 42 or 41, 41, the Even Loster episode, because the only one half of the recording like caught only my half, so it's like Garfield without Garfield. It's really sad, just me talking to myself for an hour. We apologize for that. It's completely unsalvageable, and then like the soundboard software totally broke down, so we couldn't even do soundboard. But through a little technical know-how, we managed to get a setup going, and thanks to Chris Enns over, he does a lot of stuff over on Non-Breaking Space and stuff like that. He kind of pitched in his knowledge there, so thanks a lot there, Chris. So
I just thought it was interesting because now Dave's desk went from this nice, like, clean desk with a Rode Podcaster with its little USB cord that plugs into it. Now it's like an analog mic and a mixer and cords everywhere. And I'm sorry, yeah. I had to do that.
It's Phantom Power City right here, man. So audio nerds, you might appreciate the boost in quality here because I have a little bit of control. But we'll get better. But we have a crippled soundboard now, and it only has like four sounds. But we included this one.
Dang!
There you go. Because that's maybe the most important one. All right. So anyway,
this is going to be a fantastic show. It's our favorite type of show on the thing, which it's a crossover episode. And as Dave likes to say,
okay.
From CSI New York are on CSI Miami, and you're like, what? I watch both those shows. Dang.
Dude, two of my favorite people are on the same show.
Right.
Anyway, so who are our guests, Chris?
Well, it's the two of the nicest, most fabulous people you ever meet, Gene Crawford and Carl Smith. Hey, guys.
Hey.
What up?
I have to say I'm embarrassed. I thought you said cross-dressing show. I'm wearing a tight leather miniskirt right now.
The email. I'm known for kind of little dyslexic moments like that.
It's okay.
Didn't get
that. Might have been the message we were sending just back and forth, Chris.
Yeah. So, Gene and Carl, you guys have teamed up, and you're putting out the BizCraft podcast. Can you tell us kind of the elevator pitch about this? This is awesome. I'm a listener, but give us kind of the pitch, Gene.
I'll take that, I guess. So BizCraft is basically a show where Carl and I talk about how we run our businesses. Carl runs EngineWorks, or if you listen to his description, he lets EngineWorks run while he watches it. And I run Period 3 and Unmatched Style and all the other stuff.
Awesome. Yeah, and Gene, you were on here talking Unmatched Style, but it's great to have you here talking business, biz crafting.
Business.
Business.
The URL for that being unmatchstyle.com/bizcraft and get the kind of the archive of those episodes. Yeah, it really is a great show. There's a lot of what's like the typical question over there? Kind of, it's like, how do I protect myself? How do I deal with crazy clients? And isn't it's that it's a lot of that type of stuff.
Yeah, what would you say, Carl? What's something we answer a lot?
Yeah, I would say it's a lot of that is about managing clients. Like, yeah. And for me, the answer is almost always the same. No client wants to drive. They don't want the project to fail. It's always something that you're doing. But that keeps coming back around because I think people see problems as being new and really they're things they've faced before. And I'd say that's probably a huge one, though, is managing clients. And then we get a lot on documentation, like estimating and invoices and a lot of the more administrative side of running the business. A lot of people ask those questions.
That's right.
Good. Awesome. Yeah. So, all right, everybody listen to that. We picked out some questions this week. What do you got?
Well, I was going to say one tradition that you guys have on your show is that you crack a beer and you talk about business. So being a crossover episode, I figured we should adopt some of your practices into our podcast. We have some beers. We have
some Bizcraft best practice of running a business is to drink beer.
Well, cool.
It really helps in the early years. I'll tell you that shit.
Mm-hmm.
So what are you guys drinking? What's the flavor du jour?
What you got? I'm drinking. It's brand new beer. It's Sierra Nevada Narwhal. Which is a chocolate. It's a chocolate stout, and they just came out.
That sounds.
It's tasty.
That sounds delicious.
You look fine in your dad, buddy. I can't hear narwhal without thinking of the movie Elf.
I bought it. There's a narwhal on it. I had to buy it.
Yeah. I have a Earth Thirst Double IPA from Eel River Brewing Company.
Those are fancy.
Out in Scotia, California. I'm fancy because one of our clients and one of my good friends is a natural food store, and they're just about a 5-minute walk from my office. So every time I forget to get a beer, I go get some crazy organic beer.
He's a hippie.
Yeah. Good for you. I'm drinking Mountain Dew AM with 151 in it.
Well, I'm down in a 40 over here, so.
I have a Stash IPA, which is a local Independence Brewing brewery here in Austin.
Well played.
So it's delicious. If you come down for South By, I highly recommend it.
I like that it's just called South By now. I know it's been abbreviated for a while, but even I've seen the abbreviation abbreviated. So it's not SXSW anymore. It's just SX, even when written. So I decided that next year we're gonna just say S. We're just gonna vaguely use the letter S.
Well, if Texas secedes from the U.S., South By may challenge Austin in government, and it may just be that it's South By Texas. I want those of you in Austin to know you should think about moving to the West Coast now. Looking good.
Well, that's true. If Texas became its own country, it wouldn't be in the southwest of Texas. It would be right in the center.
There you go.
Yeah.
A beautiful blue dot and a circle of red.
There you go.
We need to answer some questions.
Let's get going.
We're losing people here.
All right. So we'll get into the meat and potatoes here of the Shop Talk Show. So the first question comes from David Peterson, and he writes in saying, I've been hearing that some people have jobs where they work 100% remotely. Do you have any experiences with that? Is it an awesome way to work? I would like to know if you have any tips for finding remote jobs or convincing your boss that you should switch to working remotely. I'm asking because the idea of being able to move to another country and not have to find a new place to work sounds compelling to me.
Yeah, doesn't it?
Carl, you have any insight on
that? I have to say, first of all, I need them to define the word work in work remotely. I have people that are remote. I think they work. I'm not positive. the reality is it really starts from the top down. So it's kind of tough if you're an employee that wants to work remotely. Now, if you're like just a badass, then more than likely they would rather you go to another country but keep working for them than just leave the company. The biggest thing for us in working remotely is that we communicate every day. We probably talk more than companies that are located do. And we constantly make sure that we're taking care of each other. So that kind of a culture isn't really a decision that you make as much as it is something you find out you can do. Because a lot of people are better being located. And ultimately what I found is you find that freelancers that were very successful end up being great remote workers because they know how to take care of themselves. They know how to get things done. They know how to check in and manage clients and all those things. Just deciding you're going to start working from home, that can be really tough.
So Davis wants in on this though.
Yeah. Yeah. Right?
What do you think? Like, does he like go to AuthenticJobs.com and search for only jobs that allow remote work, or should you think he should give it a trial run first?
You know what? I think he should ask his boss. I mean, the first thing I would say is go ahead and ask. There's a good chance that he's going to say yeah. I mean, if David's if he's a good worker, if he's a good guy, you know, the worst is I've had people ask me if they could do things. I was like, actually, we're not so sure you're going to be here. Enjoy Russia. It'll be fine. But what I would say is that, and then also just, we've never hired anybody from a resume or hired anybody from Authentic Jobs. So I can't really speak to that. But I think when you start reaching out and finding companies that have remote workers, you should apply there. And there's not really like a union or a collection of companies that are remote that I know of where you can go and find them. But generally, if you go out and just start asking friends, I bet you would be able to put together a decent map of 5 or 6 companies. I mean, EngineWorks, we want to be wholly distributed, but we have one group that really wants the office.
Interesting.
Yeah, I think you could start out by just asking your current job, like, hey, can I try 2 days at home or something like that? Because you really, like Carl's saying, you got to really find out if you're good at it. Like Paravel, we're completely distributed, although we're like in the same like 30-mile pocket, you know. But like we're all good at working from home by ourselves, you know.
Right. And you do need to find that positive energy so that you're not just sitting there working, right? If it's like at GitHub where they've got the music system that they created where you can hear what's playing in the office no matter where you are. Gene, you guys actually shifted to distributed recently from being located. What's going on with that?
Well, I have a question for Dave actually because of that. But we just gave up our office to save some money trying to make a run at doing some other things. And it's been working pretty well. We actually, since we live so close together, we get together just about every day, every other day for coffee after we drop our kids off at school for like an hour, just kind of, you know, talk a little bit and see what we're going to do for the day. And then we kind of break and go do a bunch of stuff. And for the past two months, it's been working really well for us. What do you guys do, Dave? I mean, you guys are all, you're very similar to what we're doing. You're distributed, but you're all in the same town, the 30 mile pocket, you say. Do you ever get together during the week? I mean,
We'll occasionally get together, usually when there's big kind of the planning discovery phase of a project, we'll kind of all get together and we'll like sketch out what we think the UI or the site should be like. And so all of our kind of team days are focused on team activities. But usually just historically, it's like we wrap up with that about 2 o'clock and then we're like, well, we'd be better at home being productive. So
yeah, that's the thing for us is like me personally, I find that from about this time of the day till about 5, I'm worthless. Like I can't do anything. It's, you know, like all I can do is just answer emails and stuff. I can't do any actual work. So I work really well in the morning and late at night, and it just works well for our schedule to not be in an office because then all I wind up doing is walking around the office and bugging the hell out of everybody.
Yeah. The other thing I'd say to Dave is to tell his boss about the benefits of starting to have remote workers. I mean, you start to be able to work with anybody in the world. So if he thinks about it and starts doing it, it really, from a business perspective, it opens things up as well. And the one thing I would say if he wants to move to another country, so we had people when we started saying distributed was cool, we had people that moved. We probably had 3 people move in the first year. A lot of them went to Seattle, one went to San Francisco, but they were just like, well, shit, I love my job and now I can live anywhere, so I'm going to take off. But I would say the rule that we have is you have to have at least 3 hours of overlap across time zones. And so depending on where he's looking to move, he should also offer up, you know, being willing to work off hours in wherever he's living now, if it creates any kind of problem. We have a couple of developers we're working with who right now for them, it's actually Wednesday. So it's like you really have to pay attention to that when you're making that plan. But I think the idea of going to his current boss and trying to sell him on the benefits, I could even, if we have his email address, I could send him some resources that I've used that kind of, you know, give you some of those business tips and things that make it a really good decision.
That's cool.
Relevant personal experiences. My first web job was a little tiny web design agency, and it was a good job, and I was happy there. But I was just kind of thinking about moving. I didn't feel like being trapped in that town anymore, and I was super nervous about it, and I had no idea how it was going to go. But I was going to move either way. Like, I had already decided I was going to move. So I went to my boss and I said, hey, listen, I'm going to move, but I like it here and I want to stay working here and I think I can make it happen as a remote employee. And it worked. And he said, yes. And I did it and it did work and it was fine. So it just is possible. You know, I mean, I literally lived through this exact thing, being the first remote employee of this company.
Yeah.
And it can happen.
And the ball's actually in your court. You have the advantage. I mean, it's really hard to find good developers and good designers. I mean, not to say like you should just, you know, seize all your power right now. That might be kind of foolish. But, you know, like they want to keep you around. And if you think like living in whatever, Maui, would make you happy, then they probably want you to be happy. So,
yeah. And depending on where you are in your life, it's like you might not have this opportunity later. You know, if you end up with a family and you end up kind of, mm-hmm. you know, located in one place. So I say go for it. And Dave, you're absolutely right. I get calls every week, people looking for designers and developers and trying to get me to connect them up. And I mean, it is a time right now where we are definitely in demand.
Yeah.
Well, cool. All right. Well, David, hopefully that answered your question. Should we go on to the next question?
Yeah, we got another one from here from Dave again. Dave Stanton, how do you handle a client overage right near launch time? Do you put in extra hours for a week to help get the product out the door? How do you negotiate when the standard 20-hour a week agreement needs to be 40 for a short burst? I felt this was pretty biz crafty.
Yeah, and I know Dave. Dave's at the University of Florida.
Oh, really? Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, Carl knows everybody.
Yeah, you know, he's in Gainesville, which, you know, the luckiest city on earth. But, you know, for us, if we get some sort of a big request right before launch, then we actually have it in our agreement where we get to renegotiate everything. Any changes after we go into production, we basically have the right to review the entire agreement. However, what we normally do is just ask the client, what do you want to do? Because we rarely will work more. You know, on our team, we have people with 20, 25, or 30 hours a week as commitments because everybody gets to choose, do they want to work more and make more money, or do they want to work less and have more freedom? But when we get to that point with a client, normally what happens is we'll just ask the client, what do you want to do? You know, if we get people to work more, it's going to cost significantly more. Or do you just want to put the extra week in and we'll delay the launch? Because, I mean, we've talked about this before, Gene. It's very rare that a deadline is real. It's only real when they bought media or they've got some sort of a special promotion or a conference or something where they feel like they're going to lose if they don't launch in time.
Yeah, deadlines. I mean, I always sound like such a dick, but, I mean, deadlines drive me crazy. You know, because they're always just made up, pulled out of somebody's butt. You know, we just want this done by Friday the 21st, you know, and you're like, well, why? Well, because that seems okay. It just, you know, I like the Apple way of working where you just work on it until it's ready and then you put it out there when it's the best thing possible. But like Carl said, sometimes there are real shenanigans like, yeah, we're going to put this ad on TV or something crazy like that. But
well, we have fantasy sports applications that we build. You can't miss the beginning of football season if you're working on a fantasy football app.
Yeah.
Yeah. They get really pissed. I'll just let you guys know because I've, you know, sort of lived through it.
I don't have my sad trombone sound.
Oh, it's okay.
So what are we going to tell Dave here? I mean, what's the like canonical answer here? Just don't do that? Don't get yourself in a position where you have to do the burst?
I think the answer is, you know, make sure you don't sacrifice yourself to accommodate what could be a fictional deadline. If you're cool with working more, that's something I learned a long time ago, is my idea of a lifestyle company and somebody else that works with me, their idea could be totally different. Their lifestyle company could be they're cranking 60 hours a week and putting in a lot of cash in their pockets. So if you're cool with working more, then do that and just make sure you charge them. Don't cut them a break. If you're not cool with that, then, you know, just stand up and say, hey, I don't know what you want to do here, but we don't have enough time to accommodate this in this time frame. And I would also say, make sure you speak that way from the beginning before you ever get a check. The worst is to be, you know, all lovey-dovey and everything's going to be great until you get to a problem. You need to be talking with the client about how you'll approach problems from the beginning. So I think that's another big key, is you don't suddenly change from smiling to cracking a whip. You know, the whole time you've got that good steady posture of, hey, well, if we find out later we need to do this, it's probably going to cause delay. So let's just be aware of that now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Carl, I think we've had a whole episode on contracts, right? I feel like we have. If not, we should do that coming up. But like it all, like he's saying, it all starts there too, right? It all starts with that having a solid document that describes how you're going to work and the expectations, and being able to talk about that stuff before you start taking money from the client.
Yeah. I mean, and that's a key for us, is making sure, like, we'll have what we call a chemistry call before a kickoff call. And it's just 45 minutes or an hour. We don't charge the client. Anybody from Engine who wants to be on that call can listen in. We don't, you know, everybody, it's all paid for everybody that's working. What we found with a chemistry call is if the team gets to ask the client questions or the prospect questions, and the prospect gets to talk with them, if you hear laughter on the call or there's a joke or something, you know it's going to be a great project. If it gets kind of tense or something said that just feels off, then you know more than likely you shouldn't take that money and have the kickoff. And that's one of the reasons why I consider that taking that check such a critical part of the relationship, that first check. And it's basically, you said at that point, I'm with you to the end, you know? And so I think that's one of those things. You just have to make sure that when you're talking about the proposal, the contract, everything, you just have to feel so good about it and so confident that you're going to be able to maintain that relationship and that tone, you know, throughout the whole project. So, but that's what I would say to Dave, is just, you know, make sure from the very beginning you're talking through, you know, potential scenarios, things that could happen. We also send out a Monday email that explains to the client everything that happened the week before, changes they've requested, and how that's impacted the timeline and the budget. So if they say, hey, we want to add, you know, this functionality, then that following Monday, we say, you know, here's the functionality. If we had time to scope it, it's going to add 4 days to what we're anticipating and $3,000. You know, and then that way they have the opportunity on that email to say right away, well, we can't miss that deadline, you know, and we'll put in the email, this will push us past the deadline. So that's the other thing I'd say to Dave, is make sure you do it quickly. You know, don't wait and see what happens. If you see a problem, identify it right away. And that way it's really on them to make a decision how they want to respond.
Yeah, I think Dave has like two decisions. It's like either, like you guys are saying, build it into the contract, like make a plan for that 40-hour burst thing to happen, or plan for the, in my brain, it's called the afterburner, to turn on the afterburners to get this project done. Like, maybe you, that has a fixed cost or something like that. Or else your other option is to eat it, like, to just work overtime for free. And I mean, and you know, that happens in our business. It's not like unheard of, but it's, you know, I think if you plan ahead that, you know, for these contingencies, you know, and like Carl said, if they're getting near the end of their hours on you, then don't work for free possible.
And I'll add on to that, you know, in the print industry, printers, they actually make half of their money from changes on press, right? So 50% of the profit, if you're running a big print house, is because people made changes. And yet in our industry, we fight that so hard because we want to finish and move on, which I appreciate. But if they really get under the gun and you think there's value in what they want to do at the end, if you think it's going to make it a better product, I generally won't fight that. Kelly Goto, I once heard her say that when a client comes up with an idea, she only has two questions, you know, and the questions are you cool with it taking longer and are you cool with it costing more? And she'll normally say, that's a great idea. Let's see how long it takes and how much money you're willing to spend. So that's another thing. It's like, don't feel like there's always one rule. You have to look at what's the context of this. I mean, just like Dave said, you know, there are going to be times where you might decide to eat it. Maybe there's a lot more opportunity, or maybe you feel like you didn't do the best you could do, and you even meet the client halfway. I think there's times where that makes sense too.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Carl, let me ask you a question while we're – do you guys do every single project the same way as far as your contracts and the way you set the project up? Mm-hmm. Or do you like mix and match based on?
We start from the same point, but then the team gets to decide how they really want to do it because they're the ones that are responsible. So the team works directly with that prospect to put together the proposal, to figure out, you know, the total hours, the way things are going to work. The contract itself is pretty set now. And we've talked about this. We work with Gabe Levine, who's the fuck you pay me lawyer. And Gabe is just amazing, and he really helps you understand the benefit of that contract. Because one of the things for me that was always difficult was sharing a contract with a prospect, because I felt like I didn't understand it, and they were going to ask me questions, and they could smell that I was nervous. You know, clients are like dogs, right? They smell fear. And so I would say right now we start the same way. But generally, if there's legitimate reasons to do things differently, we do it. And I've told you this. I think a process should be more like a bandage that you wrap around a problem versus a meat grinder that you just force it through. And that really – that serves us well. It also gives the team control if they're really excited about something and they want to try. Like earlier this year was the first time we had done style tiles, and they were just excited about it. But we change and edit. I showed you, Gene. We've got a wiki now for our process. So the whole team can go in and update and change the process at any point. And everybody's kind of got their own flavor of it.
That's awesome.
That's cool.
We should do a sponsor while we're at it here. We're about halfway through the show. Perhaps we have a brand new sponsor. Welcome to the show, lynda.com, literally lynda.com. If you're going to go to it, though, go to lynda.com/shoptalk. It is just because it'll kind of redirect, let them know you came from here, and there's a good deal on it, too. If you've never heard of lynda.com, they have 77,000 video tutorials on it. It's crazy. Huge amount of stuff on there.
Damn.
I know. It's a lot of stuff. Web design, programming, design, photography, audio and video, 3D stuff, a lot of different stuff, right? It's not just the web stuff. You want to learn Photoshop or whatever, check out lynda.com. Lots of modern stuff on there. Lots of fundamental stuff on there. It's pretty interesting. I literally have a course on lynda.com. I literally flew out to California while I was living in Florida, did this whole course. It took me all week long to shoot it. It was a pretty interesting experience, and it's about WordPress and kind of the workflow of building a theme in WordPress. So that's one of the things you get access to. It's $25 a month that gets you access to that entire library, and they have higher level plans if you want the files and stuff like that. But if you go to lynda.com/shoptalk, you get 7 days for free. So you might as well do that.
Right on.
Sounds awesome, man. I just wrote that down.
No, that's cool. My personal testimony, incoming, my brother actually learned a butt ton of JavaScript just doing lynda.com courses. So
nice.
There you go. Yeah,
is that more or less than a regular ton?
Depends.
depends
on your build. All right. Next question, shall we? Which one do you want to do, Chris?
Probably go let's move down. You know,
from Mr. Michael. Here we go. Mr. Michael wrote in. Here we go. It's an audio.
What's up, guys? I recently had the opportunity to build a splash page for kids, and it was tons of fun. I had an excuse to flip images in CSS, and I threw in some balloons you could click and watch float away, and so on. I also worked 12 hours a day for a week designing and coding to meet this deadline. Now, this was an in-house job, but I know that if I was doing this on the side as a freelancer, I would have quoted a cost and a time frame that would have been too low and too short. How do you guys judge how much time a new project would take or cost from design to development?
Talked about this a little bit already, but let's say that – let's frame this slightly differently in that Michael spent a lot of hours on this just kind of because he was getting way into it and was loving it and chose to do it just because he just – you know what I mean? He went crazy on it.
Yeah.
What do you do with that? You know, do you try to bill them for it, or do you just?
I would say, what's the difference, right? I mean, just because you put your heart and soul into it, or you really got into it and gave them something awesome, you should totally be paid for that.
Well, not if you set them up not to expect it. I mean, if you kept what you told them initially, you know, if you told them it was going to be 100 hours, and then you started just having a blast, and you put in 130. And they don't expect it, and they didn't do anything wrong or change anything. I think you have to be careful of that.
Oh, right.
But I mean, for example, we have like at our team, if we're not sure, like say we get a fairly large app and we're not sure how we're going to do it, we'll actually have two independent devs spec out the production, and then they'll get together and look and see where they were different, and we'll find new questions that have to be asked. Now, obviously, you have to be a certain size, and you have to be able to spend that money to have people scope out like that. But it works really well. The other thing is the team sometimes will come back and say, look, we didn't expect this, but we really want to, you know, add this feature or do this. And if it's really cool, I always say, well, let's just consider that new business because it's something we can show somebody else in the future and we'll get to, you know, do something great again. So I would even say that for him. It's like if he just got into it and was really excited, you know, write that off as something that was great for you.
Would you even tell him?
I would tell him. I would definitely get credit for it.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, I would even – I mean, we do that. We'll put in – like if we've done something that a client didn't
ask – What about the expectation then? They're like, oh, I'm going to hire you for something else. Wink, wink. Feel free to spend 30 extra hours on it. Not
See, that's the problem with that. Yeah. I've actually had that problem with a client where we wound up delivering something like overnight basically. And when we had like 2 weeks to do a design, the guys did it in like, you know, 24 hours.
Yeah.
And we delivered it. And then I was like, never again. We will wait the full time period that we spec every time.
I have to agree with that mostly. If you suddenly get something done right away, and again, I mean, we bill hourly and we're very, very strict and honest about it. But if you finish something in a day that you said was going to be like a week, they will never believe you again. It would just be so if you say 3 weeks, then we'll see it in 3 days. Is that right?
Yeah, and in 3 days, they're like, where's my stuff? I haven't started yet.
It's a fine line because if you want to be honest, but at the same time, you don't want them to think you're a miracle worker and you're always going to be able to do that. Sometimes you just hit one out of the park right away.
Mm. Yeah. Cool. Let's do another one, huh? Or do we want to go on this?
No, yeah, we can totally go here. Yeah. Next question comes from Matt Shirley. He writes in and says, I've been working with a friend on his website, and we recently added an e-commerce section to his website. Bing, ka-ching. Okay, we've also been working on SEO since the e-commerce section has been added. Now, when we Google his business in general, his local ranking has gone
down,
but his national international search has gone up. Can you shed any light on this?
That's weird. I mean, that we every time we try to talk about SEO on the show, we're like, it's black magic. Nobody knows anything. Just, you know, burn effigies in your
yeah. What you gotta do is you gotta pray to Eric Schmidt every night.
Buy Google AdWords and everything goes up. As soon as they see you giving them money directly, they're very happy. I can't back that up, but I'm pretty sure it's true.
So you know, how that works.
I would also say Will Reynolds, if you guys ever get a chance to have him on your show, he's the one SEO guy I've ever met that Will seems Reynolds to understand it, and he's just like such a straight shooter good guy. His company is Seer, S-E-E-R, Interactive.
Okay. And cool.
I know a lot of shops that have used him and have just been super, super happy.
Yeah, yeah. Every time I crap on SEO, I think of guys, good guys like that. And I know in the WordPress world, there's Yoast DeValk or whatever at Yoast.com, who's like, he does good work in this area. And I hate to like say anything against him because he's just smart and does good stuff. And I mention him because he's got. I just read a blog post of his yesterday. It was all about should I charge or not charge for WordPress plugins, which was interesting in its own right. But he said, I'm coming out with one soon. He's got probably one of the biggest, most well-regarded SEO plugins for WordPress that I use and does a lot of great stuff. It's not going to help you just by installing it probably very much, but it's, you know, it's good practices. He's got one coming out that's especially for local SEO.
Hmm.
I think that's pretty interesting. And I have no idea how it's going to work or whatever, but that's one to watch, Matt, I guess, especially if you're having problems with specifically your local rankings.
I was just going to say, and this I never really understood this, but on our blog, when we first started, we had one category called random shit that we would just put everything under that category that we didn't know where it belonged. And we ended up number one in the nation for the phrase random shit. I was just like, this is worth nothing. But it's black magic to me as well. And, you know, a lot of times in our industry, we'll just fall over and say, well, good content will get you good rankings because people will tell everybody. But I think that's just us copping out because we don't get it.
I agree. Yeah, we do have a tendency to kind of poo-poo anybody that does SEO in our little world of front-end coders. But yeah. I think there's definitely a group of those people mm-hmm. who sell that, and it's kind of poo-poo. But I think it's a legit
95%.
I think so too. But I think it's a legit service, though, if you can actually do it right and actually show some results.
I do. Well, and it's not a one-time service. I mean, that's the mm-mm. thing. It is
freaking expensive to sell that.
And we've had clients who had somebody come in and promise them things, and they spent money, and we're like, why did you do that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then they're like, well, they basically said everything's built wrong. And we're like, no, it's built great.
I know.
That's the way they then try to get you to rebuild your site. It's like a downward spiral of pain when you start to believe them that there are these reasons why it didn't work. But that's why we hate them, right? Because they backdoor us, and then suddenly we're having to defend ourselves. And
mm-hmm.
But there is that 5%. I would say that's awesome. And then the problem is those guys charge a shit ton of money.
Yeah, it's expensive. Yeah. It's real work. It's real work if you're going to do it right.
I wish I had more advice for you, Matt, but that's kind of the end of it. Certainly, you know, building it right and I don't know. It's funny running a blog and having a comment section on that blog and seeing the number of comments that come in of people who are trying to improve their local SEO. There are 5 comments a day is nice post by Boulder Web Design. You know, it's very common for people to stuff city words into their thing. You know, local search is a big deal. Why you want to hire a web design agency that's local to you is beyond me, but
maybe my real name is Web Design Austin, Chris, and I got it legally changed, and you're just being judgy.
There's a secret about CSS tricks. You could leave a comment that was the best comment I've ever read that has 5 good suggestions in it for the person and a really intelligent thought, and if you sign it, Web Design, I'm not even going to delete it. I'm going to mark it as spam so that you can never leave a comment again. I hate that.
Boom.
Put your freaking name on the comment that you
write. Great post. Learned a lot. Thanks, yo.
Yeah.
I write spam comments in my
search. Yeah. I have recently stumbled across your blog post. It's the best ever. That's my favorite.
Wait a second. That was from you, Gene. Damn it.
Sorry, dude.
I thought that one was real.
I do like the spam comments to make me feel really good about myself, though.
Yeah, they're better than the negative ones. Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Let's do another one. Actually, you know what? It's 45 now. We better do another sponsor before we moved on. Longtime sponsor. If you guys have ever listened to the show, you've seen our advertisements for them before. Environments for Humans. Just you know what? Today there's as we record this, there's a summit going on. So, but I can't even tell you about it because by the time this hits the air, it's too late. But they're known for their really cool online conferences where you don't even have to leave your house. So check out environmentsforhumans.com. But they also do in-person important conferences a couple times a year. One of those is called In Control Conference, and for the first time, they're moving it to Hawaii. It's going to be in Honolulu, Hawaii, December 2nd through 4th. It is absolutely not too late to come to this. Go buy a ticket, book a flight. It's on the beach. I was out the other night randomly with two people who used to live in Honolulu, and I was like, ooh, I'm going to get the inside info, get some places to eat and stuff, which I did, which I'm excited about. And I was like, what about this place that it's at, though? Is it nice? Is it nice? Or is it in the seedy part of town? They're like, no.
Is it slummy Hawaii?
Yeah. Slumwai. No. They said this is super nice, and there's a super nice bar in the place where we're staying that is just goes right out onto the beach. So incontrolconference.com, check out that. Both me and Dave will be at it, not only attending but speaking at it, and it backs right up to the CSS Dev Conf. Also CSSDevConf.com. That's a conference, a one-day multi-track thing that's literally all about CSS. We'll be both be speaking at that as well. So check those out. Big deal. Thanks for sponsoring Environments for Humans. Hope to see you there. Dave used to play the ukulele when we did these ads, but
it's all the way across the room.
Next question is from David Kisler.
What's with all the Davids?
Yeah,
it's the third one.
Can you play it?
Yeah, here we go.
Hey, Chris and Dave. My name is David. I'm a new web designer and a graphic design student, and I'm trying to get my first entry level job and/or internship in this field. I've been doing some freelance work, but it's really not sustainable. And so my question is around, I'm just feeling really stuck around putting together my portfolio. I don't yet have, you know, a bunch of work, let alone a bunch of work that I'm super stoked on. You know, I'm still very much deep in the learning curve. I'm just feeling stuck around how to go about getting a job when, you know, I don't yet feel like very awesome, and it's just kind of leaving me in one of those job hunting paralysis sort of places. So anyways, what are your guys' thoughts on how to put myself out there? Okay, thanks so much. Bye.
Okay, how do you sell yourself without having something to sell yourself with?
Well, that's tough. He's asking us, how does he put himself out there? But he's not stoked on himself. You're not stoked on yourself, David. You don't like your own portfolio. You don't think you have a bunch of good work in here. That's not, you're not ready to look for a job, I don't think. You need to either, you know, look at your portfolio and decide that it is good enough to work or work on your portfolio. Don't you think? I mean, why would I hire you if you don't think you're any good?
Just tell them you know about the Shop Talk show and you listen to it, and there you go.
That wouldn't hurt.
Instant booster.
It's the Shop Talk bump.
It just felt like bummery. You know, he's like, oh, I'm bummed out. I'm no good. How can I get a job? That's not a good place to even start looking.
I would also throw out there that if you're not feeling good about yourself, you're not going to, you know, win a lot of hearts.
Yeah.
You've got to get to a point where you feel good. When we first started out as Engine, we, anything that we wanted to do, but nobody would hire us for, we would just do ourselves, right? We would just spend the time and, you know, it's not unlike when 37 Signals used to do 37 Express and they'd redesign FedEx, you know, even though they didn't get hired to do it. And they just showed how they would approach it and what they would do differently and why. And, you know, that seemed to work pretty good for them, even though they got out of the service thing pretty quick. So I would say if you're not happy with what you have to show, make something awesome, something you can be proud of, and then get it out there. The other thing is make sure you're doing something that's relevant to the companies you want to work with. If you go to their portfolio and see that they don't have anything responsive, you know, learn responsive and say, I can add this to what you're doing. And especially if right now you've got nothing else to do, don't sit there and you know, feel bad. I mean, sit there and create something amazing and then find somebody who thinks it's valuable. So that would be my advice.
Yeah. Yay. Start with that portfolio, man. If you're not happy with it, just kick its ass.
Yeah.
Just do one thing, you know, figure out something that you're super stoked about and make a website around that. What is in your portfolio And I feel pretty strongly. So it doesn't have to be something that somebody paid you $2,000 to do or $10,000 or $30,000 to do. It could be something that somebody paid you $0 to do. It could be a website for your mom. Literally, if you designed a website for your mom and it was awesome and it was like responsive with like cool things on there, and I could see your taste in it. I could like look at that and be like, this guy's got good taste. He's funny. Mm-hmm. He writes good copy. He's got, you know, good all this stuff. I'd be like, yeah, dude, yes, you're in. It would take one site, just one, really, you know, because one site can say so much about you.
And there are a lot of huge success stories for people who saw something on a blog, made a comment, and then built whatever it was to fix the request. I mean, I know that Jason Santa Maria ended up at Happy Cog because of his blog. The guys up at Electric Pulp, they were on Guy Kawasaki's blog, and he made some comment about he wished something worked a certain way, and they did it. And then they got connected up with Guy and, you know, ended up with talent agents and all this kind of stuff. And now that, you know, they got Colbert and Stewart. Mm-hmm. But I mean, starting out, go to your local meetups, but have something you're proud of that you can talk about. We've hired a lot of people for, you know, just role playing. That sounds wrong. You dress up.
it doesn't sound wrong if we know you, Carl.
Handle one aspect of a project that we met at a refresh or at a Ruby meetup or whatever. So I think it's about having something you're proud of and then getting out there so you can tell people about it.
Mm-hmm. Good stuff.
Here.
And don't be bummed. Come on, dude.
Yeah. I didn't mean to be a bummer on you too, David, but I said literally if you're really in a down spot right now about what you've been able to do, I don't think it's a good time to probably go, you know, approaching the number one places you want to work. It's just going to – because they're going to say no and then you're going to be even more bummed, you know?
Yeah.
Take a little bit to – okay. Anyway, next. We can do one more.
Okay.
At least.
So the next question is from Seth Etter. As front-end developers, we always have to make sure we are improving our skills and learning new techniques. Should we feel obligated to do the same with our design skills since the development we do pertains to the design of a website? So do front-end developers, code guys, need to learn more design?
Well, or like learn new techniques of design. I think that's pretty interesting because there's always like, oh, I should learn Backbone or whatever. And there's constantly new stuff to be learning as a developer. But I'm sorry if I literally said Gene. I'm not Gene.
No, Chris.
But
dude, I'm out of here.
So anyway, yeah, that's a good point. So developers, we learn a lot about different front end tech that comes out. So should we have the same expectation on design? Now I'm going to hand it over to Gene. Gene,
why not? Why not? I mean, I think you should. I mean, the shoe fits both feet. That's not right. But yeah, it's something. Why not? Right? I mean, like you just said, Backbone. I mean, I don't know what the hell that has to do with writing HTML and CSS, but anyway. There's like UX, right? There's all usability. Go do a usability study. Like look at something from the angle of mobile. I mean, there's always a different way of looking at something completely differently from a design perspective, right? I mean, you just why stop? You have to keep changing, keep going. Same thing for designers.
You know, which could be, you know, there's so many sites like I think of when I think of like learn a new design technique, I think of like Chris Spooner's Spoon graphics blog where he's like, I'm going to design something really kind of simple but explain every step by step how I do it, or Abduzidu or whatever, that's like, I'm going to design like laser beams and unicorns and stuff, but he'll teach you each little layer style that you need to click on to do it. You know, it's very educational, and that would be a new technique. That would be the equivalent of learning how to like write an SVG fallback or whatever. Totally learn it.
And I'll throw out there that like Katie Garrison, who's on our team, Katie will spend time just studying other designers and what they're doing. And I've seen her in a meeting before where a client requested something and she goes, that's really trendy right now. I don't think you're going to stand out at all. And she was able to point to 3 or 4 sites that were doing what they asked for. And because that's the other part of it, when you, especially if we're talking about marketing sites, knowing what else is out there and if you're going to stand out in the space you're in or not, I think is really critical. And so I think designers have to keep an eye on that as well.
That's a super cool point.
I think you got to, because like Carl said, you have to be abreast on what's new because, you're going to code your websites the same one way you know how, because you only have one like design aesthetic, you know, so you need to kind of learn and break your conception of what a web design looks like, I think.
Yeah. I also just quickly throw out there that, you know, we always try to start with an idea before anybody gets on a computer, because it's so easy to grab that last idea that nobody bought and just start from there. I like Chris, I love it when you start, when you talk with that, the Photoshop canvas, and you go, so I put a square up here. You know, it's like those ideas of starting from scratch. Like, I think a lot of times people feel under pressure and they start from something they already knew. I think you have to start from scratch like that.
Yeah.
Cheers.
If only there was like a website that was a gallery of all the best websites.
Where could we find one of those?
Some sort of.
And now for our next sponsor, we'd like to talk about Drupal.
Hey.
Was that free? I will never be invited back.
Yeah, just giving away ads, Carl. Thanks.
Jeez, no, I'm not.
Really biz crafting it up here.
I had to get something of value out of this, and Dan called me. What am I supposed to do?
That's good.
He's got to do something.
Kickbacks.
Dave's talking about the lovely unmatchedstyle.com. So go there if you want to see a large collection of really awesome web design and commentary, which I like that those guys have kept up over the years, that it's not just like a, I like this, give it a star rating, 1 through 5. You know, it's like, here's why we liked it.
And that's the best part.
Yeah. We actually took the star ratings off because they're totally useless.
Wow. That's bold.
It's bold. It's actually lazy. We just like couldn't figure out how to make the plugin work. But
now that's what I like to hear, right? How many decisions were like that? Yeah. And they're like, let me put some fancy reasoning behind why I can't get this plugin to work.
Nope. Turns out you just don't like JavaScript.
Yeah.
No, that's legit.
Let's finish it up with this really nerdy one from Christopher Jones.
Okay, here we go.
Hello, my name is Christopher Jones from Raleigh, North Carolina. Within the past 5 to 6 months, I've started using EMS to set font sizes, line height, and other elements on my page. I've been using a SAS function I found via Google, and it does the EMS conversion for me. I just pass it a pixel value, and it returns it in EMS based on a 16-pixel context that I hard-code ahead of time, or I can pass it a new context value. With this, I still find myself occasionally fighting font size and line height not turning out the way I want them. What's the best method via SAS or any other tool to properly set my M values? And what do you think of the appropriate uses for M's and percentages in CSS? Thanks.
M's, percents, SAS. It's got them all, guys.
Nerdy.
Gene, are you guys on SAS or anything like that?
Dude? Oh, I have no idea.
No.
No, yeah, the guys are all over that stuff, that SAS stuff. I haven't caught up to them yet. So therefore, I cannot edit any of the CSS that they've been writing lately. But, you know, it looks pretty. Yeah, I have no idea.
I put this in here because I had a post recently about kind of like, oh, I finally get it, you know, like 10 years later. M's are cool now. Because they've been cool for a long time. And everybody, all these articles are about how cool they are. And it just took me a long time. I'm like, I don't care. It's, you know, like I'm just comfortable in pixels, so I'm going to stick with it. And it was one of my like just stick in the mud kind of things. Or like, I don't know. I've designed websites for a long time. I've used pixels for a long time. And it's really not that big of a deal. So stop bothering me about it, which is kind of how I felt about preprocessors. But I have switched to M's. And I wrote a little post on CSS Tricks about kind of like, here's a couple of like pretty legit things that it helps with. And it's not a long article. It's not, I'm not trying to sell you. It's just simple. It's like, here's an example of why this is better than pixels. So, I'll link that up. Christopher mentioned that he has a SAS mix-in for using M's. That seems a little weird to me. You don't really need it. I can't imagine what that looks like because there's no browsers that like don't support M's. I mean, like IE6 supported M's, right? So like REMs, I could see you needing it, but not M's. So that seems weird.
It seems like, I mean, if you're writing code just for yourself, right? Like Chris, you make your own website, CSS Tricks. I mean, do you need all that heavy artillery?
Yeah.
I mean, totally. you feel like you do?
I mean, just SAS in general?
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah. There's a hundred reasons. But between... Oh, now I'm getting echoey.
It's the voice of God.
Let's save that. That's a long answer.
It is.
I'll have to do another one. I like your angle on it, though. I like the kind of I don't know. Why SaaS when you're alone? You know, isn't it more of a team based thing or an enormous website kind of thing? And I don't think it is. I think it's an everyday, every situation kind of thing these days.
Yeah.
That's okay though. We could disagree. That would actually be fun. Anyway, Christopher Jones, M's are cool. I kind of forget what the question was. You're kind of just asking about like what's the proper way to use them, and I don't think there is a wrong way to use it, really. Just size stuff in M's, and you'll be happy with it, I think. And I'll put the article why M's in the article. One of them being because they kind of cascade on each other. That's a big deal, right? If you set absolutely everything in M's. Based on the body font size, you can do things like the base pixel size of type should probably be different from a desktop site to a mobile site. You're going to need to change that value. And if you just change it, if you base everything off of the body, in the media query, you can just change the body font size once, and it kind of cascades through the whole site, and it kind of notches everything down a little bit. Instead of if you set everything in pixels, then in that media query, you're going to have to set every time you set font size, you're going to have to set it again, and it becomes this big block, right? Rather than just making one tiny little adjustment to the base font size. You can just change it once in the body, and it kind of pulls everything down a little bit, which is just – it just feels spine-tinglingly hot when you do it for the first time. And M's help you with that.
Suddenly I want to learn how to code. I want to be spine-tingly hot.
Mm-hmm. You are spine-tingly hot.
Thank you.
I have a couple nerdgasms a day.
Well, cool, guys. So I'm hearing a bit of echo, so maybe we need to wrap this up. I want to say thanks to the BizCraft guys for coming out. Gene, Carl, how can people follow you guys, give you money, support your products? How's that work?
I haven't thought about the money part. Gene, we can make money at this?
Money?
I thought this was just, you know... ego stroke. I didn't know.
Yeah. That's pretty much it. Carl, I'll let Carl, you can find us at unmatchstyle.com. And if you get really, really clever, you can put a /BizCraft there and check out the BizCraft show. And we do a live show, and that's where you can listen to me and Carl
Are you looking for clients though? What if somebody had
shit. What's
project?
That?
Could they hire you, or is that just not going to happen?
Say that again, Chris.
For both of you, I'd say. Is it possible to hire Period 3 or EngineWorks right now? Or are you just
You can absolutely hire us. We will do stuff for money.
Yeah, we will take absolutely. Money, but you have to work really hard to give it to us.
Good.
So we seem to say no a lot more than we say yes. But no, we have availability right now, yeah.
Yeah, you could try, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Good.
Cool.
How do you do that?
Thanks for having us on, man.
I'm sorry, we can end it, but do you have to like, what if, you know, but our EngineWorks is just a bigger team, right? So if it's a huge project, go there. If it's slightly smaller, maybe Period 3 could get it. Or do you guys flip a coin?
I don't think we ever had a conflict, have we, Gene?
No, we don't. I don't think our businesses travel in the same circle as far as size of client, because we simply can't take on a certain size of project at Period 3. I mean, it's... We do like one man type projects, right? One or two guys doing something. And I know that sounds weird because you guys at Paravel just redid the Microsoft homepage, and that seems really ginormous to me. But you know, it's smaller stuff for us, and Carl handles larger clients. And
our stuff's almost always 5 or 6 person team, kind of tackling it.
Cool.
Yeah, they're like, so Gene, who's the UX guy? Well, that'd be me. Who's doing the architecture? Well, that'd be me.
What about accessibility?
Be me. You know, it's like, it's less impressive.
I'm picturing you taking off one hat and putting on a different one, literally.
Literally. I have a wall of hats.
However, he adds all those hourlies together, so he's actually about $1,247 an hour.
Exactly. That was a nerdy-ass number answer you just pulled out of your head, man.
Yeah, I was trying to impress you. Did it work?
It did.
Cool.
Well, awesome. So be sure to follow BizCraft. Also follow at Shop Talk Show on Twitter. Rate us up in iTunes. Rate both of them 5 stars. So again, guys, thanks so much for making this crossover happen. It's like a dream of mine. This is so wonderful. And yeah, Chris, you got anything else to add?
Hashtag crossover, shoptalkshow.com.